What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Post-Gazette Sports Now YouTube channel and podcast network. He is Andrew Destin. I am Noah Hiles. Andrew, the ball club that we cover, as of time of this recording, is tied for the best record in Major League Baseball. A lot of exciting things about the Pittsburgh Pirates. Just give me your initial thoughts before we dive into it all.
This team's good. I think that's where I'm going to end the conversation. No, I mean, hey, listen, they have exceeded all expectations. There's a lot of ways we could go about this that I know you, myself, Jason, we've all written about the various different, you know, unexpected, nice developments for this Pirates club, whether that's the starting rotation, whether that's the bullpen, living up to its end despite being out with a few guys, you know, the hitting contributions they've gotten from guys that were unexpected, like Michael A. Taylor. I mean, you could go up and down the lineup throughout it. Their ability to win extra inning games, being undefeated in those so far, 3-0 in 10 games, winning in back-to-back games, walk-off fashion against the Orioles. They're finding ways to win. It's across the board, everything it seems, and I know we'll get into it later in this podcast, most things seem like they're exceeding expectations. How about you?
Yeah, I agree. I think that the big takeaway is they're getting high-end production from guys that they necessarily didn't expect to get big-time production from this year. Like I didn't anticipate them leaning on guys like Jose Hernandez, Luis Ortiz, Connor Joe, Michael A. Taylor. Like those have been the guys kind of leading the charge. And don't get me wrong, O'Neill Cruz has been pretty good too. You know, Ke'Bryan Hayes has been good too. But it's been the bottom 10 guys in the group of 26 who have made the difference so far. And when you can get that early on and then allow your key pieces to find their footing and hit midseason stride, that could be a more sustainable thing. So we're going to break down this past Baltimore series and preview what's ahead for Detroit in these next two games. But before we do, we got to talk about our show's presenting sponsor. We are always brought to you by the North Shore Tavern. If you love baseball, you'll love the North Shore Tavern. The interior is wall-to-wall Pirates. There are appetizers, entrees, cocktails, and of course, steak and seafood on a sizzling stone. Open every day, the North Shore Tavern is across from PNC Park, and it's Pittsburgh's home for steak on a stone. So, Andrew, we're going to do a good, bad, ugly. You can start us off. What was your good from this Baltimore series?
Yeah, for me, it was Joey Bart. And I know, you know, people probably are sick of hearing me talk about Joey Bart and backup catching depth. There's a lot more places to go, but I think this is an important development for a few reasons. One, it's not to bash the guy, but Henry Davis has had a really tough start to the season at the plate. What does that mean? He's been catching a lot of games back there because DeLay was banged up, because Grandal has been shelved on the IL. Davis caught nearly every game so far. I believe it's 8 out of 10 to start the season. You know, that's not sustainable for any starting catcher. So what did Joey Bart do when he gets his first start, his first game with the Pirates? Homers in his first AB, doubles in his second, catches a heck of a game from Bailey Falter, who goes 6 innings, 1 hit. You can't ask for a better debut for a backup catcher. And we have to remember, this guy has pedigree. We've talked about it. This is somebody who was a number two overall pick 6 years ago. There's still plenty of potential there. If he's your backup catcher and he can produce games like that once every 6-7 games and just be an adequate defender and provide a little pop with the bat, we know the power he can provide from a big frame. That's a big development because it eases a big burden, I think, off of Henry Davis, who is trying to, you know, get himself ingrained with catching every day in the big league. He's shown capable of it, but combining that, marrying that with also a solid bat, it's going to be really important. So I think that's an important development for the Pirates, is having another guy they can turn to that they're confident in, because the catching depth is thin, and I think Bart can be a big help there.
Yeah, I'll pivot to the guys that Joey Bart is catching baseballs from as my good, and it's starting pitching. I mean, I would have never believed you if you'd told me that the Pirates would get three quality starts against the Baltimore Orioles, but they did. Jared Jones, back-to-back solid outings from him. Bailey Falter, I mean, where the heck did that come from, Drew, on Saturday? I mean, we're 10 games through the season, and Bailey Falter has had the best start out of any Pittsburgh Pirates starter. And again, you could debate like the strikeout numbers and everything else, but I mean, the guy threw 6 scoreless 1-hit innings against the Baltimore Orioles. That was incredibly impressive. And then Marco Gonzalez has just been really good. Yep. And I think that's also kind of a surprise. He was kind of shaky coming in, wasn't great in spring, But for him to be super reliable, you know, the starting pitching has been was a question mark heading into the year. It was the big question mark all offseason. And obviously 10 games is a very small sample size. It's like 1/16 of the season. But it's been good enough so far. And you've got to figure other areas are going to continue to be a little bit better. And you add Skeens into this mix, and you know, the rotation doesn't look as bad. There is one weakness that we're going to talk about later on, but yeah, my good has been starting pitching. I'll keep it rolling here and just go over to my bad. My bad has been the fielding. It's been weird too, because some of the better fielders on this team are the guys getting charged with a lot of the errors. I mean, Cabrian has a handful. Triolo has made a couple of mistakes. And even plays that didn't register as errors have been costly. You think back to to Friday, where Taylor and Reynolds don't communicate and that ball falls in for a triple. You think to Saturday, the one hit Bailey Falter allowed probably shouldn't have been a hit. Alika Williams was chasing it. Jack Sawinski probably wasn't aggressive enough and should have ran in there and called him off. And who knows, maybe I'm writing a Bailey Falter no-hitter game story on Saturday evening, right, if that play happens. We'll never know. But this is supposed to be a pretty good fielding team when you look around the infield and the gloves that they have. You've got a Gold Glove nominee in Reynolds. You've got a Gold Glove winner and Taylor in your outfield. And they've made a lot of mistakes. They're tied for fourth in baseball with 9 errors. And they've got the fifth worst fielding percentage, 977. So those are things. And unlike other areas where you're like, oh, that could be a concerning trend, like, you know, things that we're going to talk about later, the fielding has to be better, right? Like, I don't expect Ke'Bryan Hayes to have an error every series, which is, I think, been the case so far. Or I don't know if he had one in the Baltimore series, but he's had a lot. So, yeah, that would be my bad. What's your bad, Andrew?
Yeah, I would think for me, it's, you know, there's a bunch of different places you could go here just in terms of individual performers. Jack Sawinski is the one that comes to mind for me, and you mentioned that there, the fly ball miscommunication there with Williams. But for me, it's been the hitting. We all know, anybody who's watching this, listening, how streaky of a hitter Jack Sawinski is. Last year, where he could go on a tear and be the best hitter in the lineup, and also go on a tear where he looks like a guy who should be hit, you know, playing in AAA because he can't make contact, is striking out, is staring at fastballs down the pipe. Right now, he's not doing really so much of either. It's just that he's not making a lot of hard contact, and he's hitting .176. And I worry for his sake, for Jack, that he might be playing himself out of a regular role. And that's not to say that he was getting everyday at-bats anyway, because, you know, his splits against lefties. But I'm curious to see how this goes moving forward, because Edward Olivares has shown amply capable of playing a solid outfield. They've put him in the lineup as a DH. He's been hitting the ball well. So when you start going through the outfield depth, you go, okay, Brian Reynolds, Connor Joe, Edward Olivares, you know, all of a sudden Michael A. Taylor. You're like, does Jack Sawinski become the fifth outfielder?
Right.
That's where it feels like this is trending for me. So obviously they still think very highly of him. They put him in the four hole yesterday against a righty, but need to see more from Jack before that playing time starts to dwindle a little bit more.
Yeah, and to kind of take the baton from you on guys who probably haven't earned their spot, or I don't know if that's the right word at all, actually. To take the baton from you, I guess, and to continue the thing, you look at these 9 lineup spots, and there are a couple of guys where it's like, there are probably other guys right now who are producing at a higher rate that should hold down that spot. And I look at the designated hitter position. Andrew McCutchen has had a really ugly start to this season. And that's not me advocating for Kutch to get benched or whatever. But when you look at guys like Connor Joe and Edward Olivares, who aren't your traditional starting 9, you know, what have they done that doesn't deserve a little bit more time in the DH spot ahead of McCutchen? And I understand why McCutchen's on this team, and there is certain value that I still think he can provide at his old age. But, like, what's the number one thing, Andrew, that Andrew McCutchen provides at this point in his career?
Yeah, I mean,
ideally, it's getting on base. It's being able to draw walks. He's not even doing that. You look, he's 3-for-20 with one extra base hit, 11 strikeouts, 4 walks. And that was the big difference maker last year with him, was he had the eye. He could draw those long counts, and he could get on base. And that's not happening. And, again, we're still very early on. And putting him in the middle of the batting order is also something where it's I don't know if that's going to continue to work if you keep doing that, just because, I mean, he's hitting 125 with runners in scoring position, hitting under 100 with runners on base altogether. I expect those things to be better with more opportunities, obviously. I'm not sitting here saying give up on Andrew McCutchen 10 games into this season. I'm just saying, like what you pointed out with Sawinski in the outfield, there are other options that bat right-handed, you know, that could do exactly what you're looking for McCutchen to do in this DH spot, that probably have a little bit more pop than he does at this age. And if McCutchen's not going to be at least getting on base, then, you know, there needs to be some conversations to take place. So it's just been an ugly start for Kutch. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, what happens if he doesn't get out of this early season slump. What's your ugly, Andrew?
Yeah, I mean, I would say for me, it's something that's less ugly, but it certainly still is something to monitor. It's the bullpen depth. With Ryan Borucki going on the injured list, with that left triceps inflammation, correct me if I'm wrong. No, I don't know if I've ever inflamed my left triceps. Tell me if you ever have. But not great for Borucki. He, you know, told us that he doesn't think it'll be more than the 15-day IL stint. But regardless, with Borucki being shelved, now you're looking at a bullpen that has David Bednar still kind of rounding into shape after missing a lot of time with the lat issue in spring training. No Borucki, like I said, no Colin Holderman, no Carmen Majinski, and no Dari Moretta, who is out because of Tommy John. The team is still top 10 in team ERA, but I look at the current cast of bullpen guys, and I still have a lot of doubt over whether Josh Fleming, Ryder Ryan, Hunter Stratton can hold this down moving forward. They are doing, again, an admirable job, banner job right now of moving the baton forward, like you said, and continuing that line, putting out good outings from the bullpen, good relief appearances. I got a lot of doubt about whether or not that's sustainable moving forward. So they need guys back healthy, but it feels like they're just dropping off like flies.
Yeah, I mean, those names you listed, Morietta, Holderman, Borucki, Muljinski, Bednar, those are five of your top six bullpen arms heading into spring training. Mm-hmm. You know, and actually they were your top. No, they had Chapman heading into spring training. I think those five and Chapman, you looked at, you're like, okay, those are six locks that you can hand the ball to and expect a clean inning. And then there were going to be a couple of other spots battled for amongst the rest of the group, who has actually, like you said, been really good with Josh Fleming and Ryder Ryan and all those guys. Jose Hernandez, I think Ortiz and Contreras have been fine. But yeah, you look, I mean, can they survive without one or two of these guys throughout the whole year? Probably, right? Like they're already out without Morietta. But if you're losing more than two of them for extended time, now you're looking at some concerns. Like Bednar clearly, yeah, is still figuring things out, and you're seeing that. But yeah, I mean, Borucki's a big piece to this team that probably doesn't get talked about enough. And he was even bigger without Holderman, who is still figuring it out in AAA right now as he's getting healthy. So yeah, the bullpen depth is a little concerning right now. Obviously the production's there, but I don't think the guys that are currently on the team in that spot are going to be able to hold down the fort for 162.
Yeah. No, it's certainly something that you look at it, it's a concern. It's not one right now, just based off results, but it, like I said, it's a long season. Got to see what you get out of these guys moving forward. And I'd be lying if I said I was confident that the current crop is going to be able to hold it together. They need some reinforcements and pronto.
Yes. All right. So before we wrap it up here, also, I just want to say, I mean, we got into a little bit of negative stuff there. I mean, this team is 8-2. We recognize that it's not all negative here on this show. It's just, you know, we've written about a lot of really positive things because there have been a lot of victories. But you got to make sure you're also pointing out, like, hey, these are some things you got to keep an eye on, where if they don't fix them, the winning might stop. So before we wrap it up, Andrew, just looking at this two-game series against the Detroit Tigers, what's one key thing that you have your eye on for these two games?
Getting after starting pitching. I'm looking at Olson. He's a heck of a starter for Detroit. Had a tremendous second half last year. Casey Mize, a former number one overall pick, has never quite put it together at the big league level. You get those guys out of the game. You get to that Tigers bullpen. You should feel pretty darn confident. I think this is a very manageable series to take a pair from. Obviously, they play Detroit later on at the end of May, which will be another chance for them to face off against this Tigers team. That's gotten off to, you know, a surprisingly good start. Tigers are 6-3. I don't know if I quite had that in my bag. Part of that, of course, is by playing teams like the White Sox, the A's, and the Mets to start off your season. But you still got to win the games. So I look at it as get to that starting pitching and get to a bullpen that for the Tigers is not exactly their biggest strength. How about you?
I mean, my big key for this series involves one guy. His name's Mitch Keller. We need to see something more from Mitch today as we're recording this on Monday. And not to say the second game is obsolete by any means. Obviously, every game matters. Sure. But I think the big thing, if Mitch Keller can deliver you a good quality start here, I think it would ease some nerves throughout just anyone who follows this team, including, you know, people in the front office. Like I feel like two bad starts for a season, it's whatever, you know, you're kind of like, not great. But three in a row against the Marlins, the Nationals, and then the Tigers. Now you're kind of sitting here thinking, okay, there might be a reason to be a little concerned. So big game today for the Pirates, and it really all revolves around Mitch. Let's see what he can do in his third outing, and if he can get it right, then, you know, that's very good news for this ball club. Andrew, any final thoughts before we wrap things up?
Not too much on my end. Just looking forward to you getting your first road trip, man. That's honestly where my mind's at. Looking forward to you getting out there to New York and Philly. I know it's going to be a blast for you.
Yeah, I am too. I'm ready to get back on the road. Been in Pittsburgh for too long. As I'm used to traveling all the time from my former beat. So that's all we got. He's Andrew Destin. I'm Noah Hiles. This show is brought to you by North Shore Tavern. Keep tuning in to the Post Gazette Sports Now YouTube channel and podcast network for all of your Pittsburgh sports content. And you can read everything that we write about Pittsburgh sports at post-gazette.com. Take care.
Thank you for checking out this content from Post Gazette Sports. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For all of the sports coverage the Post Gazette has to offer, visit post-gazette.com.